This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
The goal of this podcast since day one is to provide the best information on the Vancouver real estate market at no cost to you, the listeners. To that end, we'd like to thank the following sponsors.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it also is making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Burquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular with 80% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one-bedroom all the way to three-bedroom homes remaining. Check out marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community in West Coquitlam, with 165 homes ranging from junior one beds to three beds. Soane House offers the perfect West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's S-O-E-N-H-A-U-S. Or you can learn more at marcon.ca or follow them at Instagram at Marcon Homes.
Marcon, building for life.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, today I am excited because we've got past guest, fan favorite, and friend of the show, Todd Talbot.
That's right. Todd Talbot is back at least for the third or fourth time. This is the only time he hasn't been in the studio. So this is like the COVID check-in. And apart from anything Todd says, it's pretty clear that he can fill a room over the phone.
Yeah. No, he can fill a phone over the room. That's for sure. His energy is outstanding. He's a performer. He is just a naturally gifted
He's a proud song
entertainer.
And dance man. Proud song and dance man.
And we love Todd. He's been on the show several times, but it's so good to have him back. And, you know, I can't stress this enough. You ask him one question, he goes, he carries this show today.
Yeah, no kidding. No, it's like we didn't even really, you know, just hit record and ask one and watch the performance. But it's, you know, the thing about Todd is, I mean, performance aside, very, very smart when it comes to real estate. I mean, this guy, he talks about investments he's made in the city, where he's at with them, what he's excited about. And it's just a good check-in.
Yeah. It reminds me of there's that saying that don't mistake my kindness for, what is it?
You know this one?
Weakness. Don't mistake my kindness for weakness. Is that it? Todd's is like, don't mistake my celebrity for lack of investment advice.
Or savvy.
Savvy.
Yeah.
For investment savvy advice.
I mean, because he
was it useful that I did that first comparison?
Yeah, I do think that really helped explain where you're going. Because it is true. I mean, Todd is a serial investor.
Right.
And he puts his money where his mouth is. There's no question. And here's the other thing. A checkup. Last time Todd was on the show, I would say, looking back, we were at the bottom. Right.
Sure.
And Todd timed it. Todd was buying and he was buying with confidence. So stay tuned for this conversation. It's a great conversation. And just before we move on, Adam, you were once tapped to be potentially the next Todd Talbot. I don't know if we've talked about this before, but it was a reality show, a real estate reality show. What was the premise? Do you remember the premise?
The premise was the idea was that they were going to take a bunch of top teams in Vancouver and basically – that was the idea of the show, that you'd have almost like a competition, who was doing more deals, and they'd be following these teams over the course of the year, and there'd be like a point system, and basically it was like volume-based top teams in the city. And so I sat down with a guy. Immediately, he knew my energy was not right for the show. He was.
Did he give you notes?
It was. Yeah, he was like, "Stop being such a potato." No, he was like, just generally speaking, I don't think I have that. You know, there's like all these celebrity agents. I think about like Todd, right? Yeah. Todd, for example. Todd, he's like almost a Ryan Reynolds type kind of humor.
Well, the thing is that if you took a camera and followed Todd around,
oh, it would be
out of
be
24
engaging.
Hours, you might get 19 and a half usable hours.
Yeah.
And like for the other three or four, he's sleeping.
Yeah. 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 And, exactly.
You know, yeah. Whereas. And
whereas the exact opposite hours would exist in my life.
It would be
I'm
like,
sleeping for 19.
Just give me 20 minutes. Just let me get something out of this week's worth of filming.
The interview did not go well. I think he pretty much shut it down.
But you know what?
I don't have any training.
In all fairness, the show did not materialize. So you don't know. You could have been the star of it.
I didn't get shortlisted, Matt. That was made clear. When they told me to take my things and get out. But no, anyways, yeah, it was another life. But when I know a guy like Todd, I realize my acting days were numbered.
Yeah, yeah, no, well, hey, that's,
I still have that cameo on Mighty Ducks to be thankful for, though.
You know, kind of, what are you referring to? You kind of do look like Emilio Estevez a bit.
I do have that cameo in that Brandon Manitoba bowling commercial that I'm still proud of.
Right. So. Well, you also have the Valentine's Day.
Oh yeah,
you've been on TV more than most.
I've been on TV. Yeah, I got caught. Buying a Valentine's Day gift at about 6 o'clock on Valentine's Day, and they blurred my face.
They blurred your face.
Yeah, but it's still it lives on to haunt me. a lot of people comment on that every Valentine's Day, including my wife.
So what else do we got before we cut to our talk with Todd? A few things, Adam. One, a lot of people, and I've been speaking to clients this week. This seems to have come up about five times, creating panic in the market or anxiety for potential buyers. There was a house on Trout Lake. We should just touch on this very quickly. Yeah. There was a house on the west side of Trout Lake, oversized lot, 1990 house, 3,000 square feet, really large house overlooking the park that sold over $800,000 over the asking price this last
sure.
week. 37 offers. The article that was in the Georgia Strait that I think everybody is talking about presents it. It doesn't capture, I don't think it captures the reality of the situation,
no,
right?
No.
For one, it presents the asking price of $1.728 as somehow reflective of market value in this case.
It's weird how people do that. Like they don't think that
it's
their
also
strategy
not that hard of a concept that part of the advertising strategy is to put a very low price, right? Like it's not that hard of a concept that you can price things wherever you want.
Right. You could put it on for 99 cents.
Exactly. And it's consistently people are acting like as if there's some sort of objective market value at the asking price. And then when it goes over, it's somebody overshooting. So in this case, somebody overshot $1 million whereas, you know, I had a client interest in this house. I actually wrote an offer on it. I was one of 37. In those situations, you're never sure if you want to be the winning bid.
It's tricky. It's very tricky. And it gets emotional and the competition is fierce, right?
Right. So, but it did sell for 2.6. I had this, we both looked at this house and I think we had it pegged at kind of 2.3, 2.4 range.
Yeah, and that was kind of without thinking about. So like one of the things we talked about is one, it was a big house. It was a huge house.
Yeah.
It was on
a pretty special lot and a pretty special house.
Yeah, and in thinking about the latent value of the land, it's in an area right across from Trout Lake, lots of townhomes in that area. You could see it as a potential land assembly potentially. You know, there's a lot of reasons why someone might pay what it sold for.
Not apart from the fact that we're definitely in a rising market for single family.
Exactly. But the two things that come out of this that just never cease to amaze me. One is, the asking price thing, as if like you always hear about someone who says, "Hey, yeah, well, did you hear my aunt got like $40,000 off of a house in
on the west side or something like that. Yeah. And it's like, okay, well, first of all, what was the asking price? Like, as if asking price is what market value is, and if you can negotiate below. Like, for all I know, the house was $300,000 over market value, and she still paid $250,000 higher than she should have, right?
She grinded them down.
Yeah, exactly. So there's that. And then the second component here to always think about is these media stories, and they come out often they're in some kind of global publication where it says like these 10 houses in Vancouver are over $2 million. And it's like, they're all these dilapidated, tear down properties. And it's like, people can't justify that like land close to water or in the most primo locations in a very expensive city, is worth a lot more than
right,
the improvement.
Right, they're looking at, and that, look at that door's all scratched up.
Well, and this is it. And it's maybe the reason for that is you think about in other areas of Canada where the land is not that valuable, the improvement is what's weighted for the value, right? If you have a really nice house with high-end finishes, that might justify a high price point. Whereas in Vancouver, though, of course, you know, 90% of the value typically is in the land. So it's always a little annoying to see these media articles. But we thought we'd at least address the Victoria.
Yeah, because I mean, it is something that has come up in a number of conversations this week, and it gets people a little bit concerned. And there's no doubt that was a great price for the seller, and there's no doubt there's a lot of demand for single family homes in East Vancouver and in all areas of the Lower Mainland.
And congratulations to the buyer.
Yeah,
because I actually think it's a great house.
Well, absolutely. But what else do we have today, Adam? Before we get to TT. Today, as always, we are sponsored by Oakland Realty. This is our brokerage, best brokerage in town with a fantastic culture, COVID or not. It's a great place to hang your hat. If you're a new agent, aspiring agent, somebody who's been in the business for a while and looking to make a change, head over to oakland.com/join. Type in VRP 2020. That is oakland.com/join. Type in VRP 2020, meet with Michael Morgan and the gang. You'll get a huge incentive for this password. Yep. And you won't be disappointed.
That's
for sure.
Just a quick thing to add to that, Matt. You said culture. And this is a thing. Oakland, when people were at the office, the culture was terrific. More challenging is when COVID, they've actually been able to maintain the culture, which has been phenomenal, right? And everyone's working remotely, and still, you feel like you're really part of a community. So shout out to Oakland, no better brokerage in the business. And finally, Matt, last but not least, we're still doing the listing incentives.
Yes.
So if you are interested in listing your home for the spring market, do get in touch. We have a fantastic incentive. If you're looking to refer a friend to work with the Scalina brothers, you can get in touch as well, and there'll be an incentive for you as well. And last but not least, Matt, let's cut to our interview with Todd Talbot.
Absolutely, guys. This one does not disappoint. Enjoy.
Okay, so we're here with Todd Talbot, host of HGTV's Love It or List It Vancouver, real estate investor, champion of right sizing.
And the little guy.
Yeah. What? Who? And a little guy. Wait,
Todd, are you calling me a little
Todd's
guy?
Todd's not a little guy. Todd's towering over you.
No, I meant you're a champion of the everyman is what I kind of meant. Yeah.
Little guy, everyman.
I was going to say.
I like that. That sounds great. Thank you for that lovely introduction.
How you doing, Todd? Last but not least, fan favorite and past guest.
Past guest, yeah.
So welcome back. Appreciate you
Thank
making
you.
The time.
Are you in the interior right now, Todd, or are you an East Van? Where are you? Usually
No,
you're
I'm in East
studio.
Vancouver. I know normally we get to do this face-to-face, and it's always a ton of fun talking to you guys, but no, I'm in East Vancouver at the moment.
Nice. First of all, I think a lot of our listeners know who you are, but I'd love to just ask you to tell us a little bit about yourself, but also catch us up to speed on kind of what you've been doing lately, because you're a busy guy, but you wear a lot of hats. So maybe just, start by maybe reminding our listeners.
This is always a very tough question, but I guess the Coles notes of it. I'm a trained actor. That's you know, I went to theater school in England, had a very long career in film and TV as well as live theater. And many, many years ago, probably close to 20 years ago, I started buying real estate in Vancouver as a theater actor, which was, I guess, a little bit odd. And, you know, that passion for real estate started to grow, and I kind of expanded my repertoire of things that I was involved in terms of real estate. And I just, I loved it. Like, I just love the conversation and the machine of real estate. And so that kind of grew and took over things, ultimately culminating, bringing my two worlds together with a show on HGTV, Love It or List It Vancouver. And so we shot that for about 8 years. And so that's finished now, which is awesome. It was definitely time to move on to other things. But it's kind of left me in an interesting position now where I've gotten really interested in the dynamics of real estate, I think more so than I was when I was younger. I'm interested in what we're building and why we're building it and where we're building it. So I've kind of gone down the rabbit hole of these types of conversations around community and cities and really watching people, I think, struggle to navigate the financial side of things in terms of, you know, buying houses, especially in expensive cities in Canada. And, you know, my gut instinct was that the system might be a little bit broken and there might be a different way to approach things. And so we took that on as a family, leaving our big house in Lions Bay, moving to East Vancouver which is a little under 1,200 square foot detached house on a 25-foot lot. And so I just continue to kind of explore what that is through talking to people like you guys, investing in real estate. We're kind of living this journey. And then at the same time, you know, I love, obviously my background is in performing and acting and stuff like that. So we've got a couple of shows in development. I was going to go back. We were in rehearsal for a musical. I do sing and dance, proud to say. But the show got canceled because of COVID. So, you know, there's just, I don't know. I'm a mixed bag of things. I used to kind of be embarrassed about the different elements of my career and my life. But now I'm like, oh, come on. This is great. Like, the diversity is the thing that kind of keeps me going. So
you're like a modern day Renaissance man. It's funny. You know what?
I could have just shut up through that whole thing and you could have just modern day Renaissance.
I'm changing the title for next time you're on. But you know what the funny thing is I bet the critique is often that, oh, that guy's an actor. You know, maybe he's not out there doing as much as you're doing. But anybody that knows you knows, wow, like you're not only are you investing in the market, but you're moving at a really, really fast pace. And then on top of it, you're actually on the tools. Like if anyone follows you on Instagram, you're very seldom off the tools.
Yeah, I love it. Like honestly, that's my happy place. There's something about renovating building that just is my calm zone. And so I need that part of my life for sure. I honestly think that, and you guys talk to a lot of really smart people on this show, myself excluded. But you know, for me, whenever I listen to somebody who's gonna, you know, share their perspective or their advice or whatever it happens to be, if they're not putting their money where their mouth is, you know, there's a credibility loss there. And, you know, so when I talk about where we're going in terms of buying real estate for our family, you know, we're doing it. We're trying to live that journey, but also we've really doubled down in terms of on the investment side over the last 2-3 years. And so, I mean, I'm a big fan of Vancouver real estate, and we're definitely in the game big time. In a few different ways now too.
And it would be good to kind of unpack those different ways, but I was thinking, we were talking a bit before we hit the record button here, and last time you were on, I feel like we're in a very different market, and you just bought, I think it was something in Mount Pleasant with a partner, but you were in Kelowna, and you were like moving when a lot of other people were kind of gun shy, right? You were making fairly big moves, and you were
confident.
It didn't feel as bullish, like the market didn't feel as bullish. And yeah, and I remember you were kind of confidently moving through it. Can you talk a little bit about that, maybe some of those investments?
Yeah,
and also,
I think,
and also
think
the mindset.
If we go back and listen to that interview, and I remember saying this to a couple people, and no one has a crystal ball, of course, but I remember when we bought the house in Mount Pleasant, I said, I think we timed the bottom of the market for that cycle, that little mini cycle that we were in. And I think maybe I was right. You know, it's good to be right every once in a while. But yeah, I mean, for me, I like to look at the macro elements that are driving, especially the Vancouver market. Lots of people get caught up in the micro stuff and maybe distracted by certain things, especially the media. And it can get scary. You know, my news feed in the morning has a mix of real estate news articles every day. And it's hilarious because one will say the market is, you know, just on the precipice of crashing. And the other will say, you know, it's on fire and there's no end in sight. So how do you navigate that? How do you figure out how to move forward confidently? I think a part of it is knowing your comfort zone and, you know, what you believe in, what is your niche in terms of buying? And that's part. And then the other part is just to kind of like scope back a little bit. You got to be able to scope back and kind of clear away the chatter that's happening from week to week, month to month, and look at the broader strokes. I think that I say this every time, I sound like a broken record. Vancouver's an awesome city. It's got challenges for sure, but I think in the grand scheme of things, people want to be here. And ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, it's a supply and demand equation, and we don't have a lot of supply. We struggle with figuring that out. We haven't figured it out yet. And then the next question is, will the demand subside in some capacity? I don't think so. I don't think it's going to affect the market that greatly. And then the last thing I'll say about that is I'm a buy and hold guy. So, you know, I like to mitigate the risk of that investment by always knowing that I have the ability to hold this through any short-term fluctuations.
Right. And it's worth kind of putting a fine point on that, kind of taking a step back and not kind of focusing on that, like the week-to-week newsfeed, right? Because, you know, one thing I was thinking of, and Adam and I have been talking over the last couple of weeks, I think on the show as well, about, oh, how crazy it is and you know, yada, yada about the market. But it's funny, like in moments like this, it feels like there's this sense that the latent value of the land is, there's an endless possibilities, like as if it's going to be all towers in East Van soon. And like, if you can get the last remaining house, it's your gold ticket. And like a year and a half ago, it felt like these prices are way too high and, you know, and oh my God, what, you know, some people I was talking to are like, you know, should I just run for the hills type thing? And it's like the ebb and flow and the psychology of it. Whereas, yeah, if you just take that step back and think about those points you're outlining there, you know, I think you'll be fine.
It's tricky to, you have to be very clear about what perspective that you're looking at the market from. Because if you're looking at it from an investor's perspective and you're trying to evaluate, you know, future value and future development possibilities on a piece of property or whatever your path is, that's one conversation. And we talk about price and where it's going from that perspective. If you pivot the conversation a little bit to, you know, are the prices sustainable? And who can buy these, which is the reflex that people jump into immediately when they are thinking about, can this continue? They go, well, who can afford these prices? And as you slide into that conversation, you look at it from a different way, but you also open up a whole nother can of worms. And then you're in tricky territory because you start to now talk about community and whether families can stay in the city, and are we building the right homes for these people to be able to afford? does smaller units actually mean better affordability? Sure, it means slightly less cost, but you know, on that price per square foot, oftentimes it's driving price up. So there's so many different dynamics at play. So it's very difficult to analyze. And I think people get confused in that. You know, what hat they're wearing. You're wearing your investor, your homeowner, you know, your community analysis. It's tricky.
Yeah, and I think it's funny because we are kind of always monitoring the market, and we're talking about buying something right now, and it's funny. The conversation that you have with yourself when you're analyzing a property, even if you know all of that stuff, it's so easy to slide into a place where you're overanalyzing. Like, it's so the paralysis argument is real, right? Because it's tricky. And I think that's the biggest thing is you can talk yourself out of spending $1 million pretty easy if you want to, right?
Yeah. I can talk myself out of buying a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's the difference between people who are in action and make something happen and the people who sit on the sidelines.
Right.
There's a point where you have to leap. You know, you do your due diligence, you trust your plan and your gut. And then there's a moment for everybody. I don't care who you are. You can own one property, 50. You could be a big time developer. There is a moment, and I've watched people and I've gone through it myself, where it's that you take that deep breath and you go, okay, are we going to do this or not? And that's the gut check time. You've done all your homework and it's tricky. There's always a moment of stress, like expansion, when you buy a piece of property, if you're laddering up in your portfolio or just in life in general, where that mortgage is just a little bit bigger and you think, how is this going to affect my lifestyle, my family? And there's always that moment of low level panic in there. Everyone gets it.
Are you surprised by where we're at in the market right now, all things yes. considered?
Yeah, I'd be lying. I think anyone who at the beginning of the pandemic, you know, said that, oh, wow, this is not only going to kickstart another run in the real estate market, but it's going to catch on fire. Like, anyone who said that, I think it defies logic to a certain degree. When you look back at some of the things that have played out, and nobody knew the dynamics that were going to unfold with this. When you look back at it, I think that there are elements of it that make sense. You know, again, desirability of Vancouver, I think people are still, or British Columbia in general, I think people are still really keen on this region of the country and this area of the world. And then, you know, you quickly go into this detached mentality, which was everyone wants to kind of like protect, find space that they can control themselves. So there was this rush on detached properties, you know, single family homes. And, you know, I think that was a legitimate reaction to where we were at. So to a certain degree, I think that makes sense. And then you add in some of the other fundamentals like low interest rates and those types of things that, you know, really kickstarted it. You know, government was handing out money too. So there were a lot of things in hindsight that I think rationalize what has happened and what is happening. But I think at the beginning, I didn't hear anybody say that they thought this was going to happen.
So I'm kind of curious, Todd, and I feel like, well, at the beginning of the pandemic, I think I was talking to you, but it was more about get my kid through grade 3 math. Then
Todd Talbot's fantastic at math,
Math tutor. Yeah. I forgot that in my bio up front.
I was going to say, once a week at my kitchen table. But
I am literally walking over art supplies from my daughter's homeschooling art project as we speak.
There you go. So
life is upside down.
but I'm curious to kind of hear about your experience through, because I can't remember exactly when we had you on when you bought that Mount Pleasant place, but I do remember. So it was you bought it with a partner. You got a good deal because you said you'd clear it out. There was significant renovation
as I remember. But can you kind of walk us through that process, I guess, and also how COVID impacted that process at all? Did you have tenants in there by then? You know, obviously the larger your portfolio, something like COVID creates anxiety, depending on your makeup. But yeah, can you talk a little bit about it?
Yeah. So the house, I think the big win for us was on the purchase price, which I say over and over again, you know, you make your money when you buy. So that was a critical piece of the success of that piece of property. It was vacant, so we didn't have tenants, and this was pre-COVID. So we managed to get in and do a very efficient, cost-effective renovation on that space and get it fully tenanted so that it cash flowed. And so, you know, that piece was already up and running. We had a decent amount of positive cash flow. In fact, we're going through a refinancing process right now on that property to pull out essentially everything we put into it, down payment, renovation, everything, and we'll still cash flow it. So to me, that's the magic formula. I can do that. It's still cash flowed, and technically I don't have any of my money in there, but we've got a large amount of equity built up as well. So to me, that's the golden formula for me. It's not for everybody. And in terms of like tenants and COVID, yeah, as a landlord, I was like, ooh, I wonder what's going to happen here. There was some anxiety. I don't traditionally buy real estate outside of Greater Vancouver, but I do own a house just outside of Calgary. And that property, we had to address the rent. I know some people just gave some free months away, but I felt it was important to keep our tenant there long term. So we decided to lower the rent, which would be the equivalent of giving them 4 months free rent. But instead of just stopping it and starting it again, we decided to just lower it and amortize that over the long run. And the reason I did that was because I felt, you know, we want to just keep the momentum of payment coming in, because it's hard when you stop payment for something and then you have to kick back into it.
Right.
So that was the strategy we used. The tenant was overjoyed by, you know, the relief of that adjustment in rent. But in terms of the Vancouver rentals, everything has been fairly smooth during COVID. We had a couple of tenants turnover in a couple different suites. And I was worried about that, but it turned out to really not be much of an issue, a little bit on the showing side, but other than that, it was fine.
Yeah, you know what? I had a situation where I was looking for a new tenant in August, and I was actually really nervous about what that would look like. And it was pretty easy.
I feel like, and I could be wrong about this, we haven't talked to a property manager on the show for a little bit, but it feels like the rental market is pretty much back in place.
In fact, rentals.ca, and I don't have it in front of me, just came out with a prediction that rents by the end of this year in Vancouver will be up 3%.
Hmm.
They're down, of course, but
they're 8 to 12 months ago, there was a lot of movement, maybe even a little bit more, where there was this softening on the rent side, which is an experience that we haven't had in a very, like, I can't remember the last time I heard that being talked about.
Right.
But, you know, for any long-term tenants, they're protected by no rent increases at the moment, for sure. And I don't know when that will be reinstated, but yeah, I mean, I think the rental market seems really strong.
Can we talk about, like, it's interesting, Todd, that you say, like, outside of typically Greater Vancouver, you're not really looking at other markets, but can we talk about areas, regions that you're excited about in the province?
Sure. You know, it feels like a long time since I've been to any other place in the province. But I think that there has been this explosion in people looking at other alternatives. If there's something from a real estate perspective that has come out of this, is people are analyzing their home with a new lens. You know, there's different requirements, how they're using their space. And I think that's a great thing. People are obviously, the onset of working from home and those different capacities allow people to explore the possibility of living outside the city, you know, moving to Nelson, or, you know, over to the Vancouver Island. And, you know, beyond the obvious places, which I think, you know, Kelowna tends to kind of be Kelowna and Victoria, maybe the two kind of, you know, shining lights of where people move to. We've definitely seen people looking at smaller communities. And I think when it comes to that, really, I can only speak to it anecdotally. But I know when we travel, my brother lives in Nelson, you know, you go to these communities and Rebecca and I have said to each other, why don't we live here? Like, why? There's this.
About Nelson specifically.
Nelson, yeah, we had a coffee in Nelson last year and we're like, what are we doing?
Yeah, I mean, Nelson's a gem. It's magical. But there are so many amazing places. And, you know, you have that conversation. And I think in the past, people have been so tied to work and tied to their current location, especially around Vancouver, Greater Vancouver. But now people are kind of opening up to different possibilities. And, you know, places like Campbell River on Vancouver Island, people are moving to Gulf Islands. A friend emailed me and said, do you want to buy a third of a piece of property on Salt Spring Island? You know, recreational property or kind of pseudo recreational property, this little kind of gap market where it's not like straight up, I only go there in the summer or the winter to ski or swim, but it's kind of, you know, where you could live there or maybe pre-retirement.
Like Lake Country or something, maybe.
Yeah, where people are kind of getting excited about the possibility of maybe, you know, people's lives have changed. And therefore, their accommodation, their living, their home can change as well. So I know I'm not giving you very specifics.
No, that makes sense. That everything you're saying makes sense. And it's, you know, it's what we've been talking about and what we're seeing. And it's funny because, I mean, this trend has been happening over the past year aggressively. And last time we had you on the program, we talked about right-sizing. We talked about life as an urbanite. We talked about living close to the city. And it seems like you're swimming against the stream in a lot of ways, I think. Can you talk about maybe like one thing we should maybe consider is this notion of right sizing at a time where there was a lot of chatter about the death of the city?
Yeah, I mean, I think generally, like I'll put this statement out, the city's not going anywhere. It's still going to be the hub. I don't have any concern that there's going to be this mass exodus. In fact, I think statistically, we're not seeing people leave the city in any type of numbers that will make any foundational difference. In fact, I think one of the things that drives people to living in the urban centers, other than work, is this kind of notion of connectivity. And if there was ever a reminder that we crave that connectivity, it has been through this time. I don't know about you, but like, I'm kind of getting weary in the process now of not being able to connect with friends and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So the city offers that connectivity. Now, it depends on where you live and how you want to define that. It allows you to be close to friends and family. It allows you to be potentially closer to work, walkable. All of these elements that are core pieces for people's experience of life traditionally revolve around the city. It's not to say that you can't, you know, live in Rosalind and have an amazing lifestyle. Of course you can. But for the urban experience, I think people have been reminded of some of the benefits that maybe we took for granted. So I don't see the city going anywhere. I see still a big challenge, pandemic aside. We will get through this. I see a big challenge around how many just single detached homes we have and the amount of space that's taken up by those and the lack of efficiency in those homes. Like that to me is one of our core challenges, and it's not easily solved. We decided, as I've said before, you know, to live in a slightly smaller space. I'm not an extremist. We're not living in a tiny home. There's challenges for sure. But we're actually pivoting from this smaller house to a 3-bedroom condo about 5 minutes away on Nanaimo that's currently under construction. So we're going to take it one step forward. And I know there's been a lot of talk about how people don't necessarily want to live in condos anymore. And I just don't think that that's going to be the case in the future. It doesn't faze me. It's a smaller development.
Todd, did you say you're moving? I didn't know this.
This is Ella?
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. So we're going to move. So we bought a 3-bedroom pre-sale unit at the Ella on Nanaimo. And
it's going up quick.
It's going up quick. You don't hear this very often, but I believe they're ahead of schedule. And so they're doing a great job from what I can tell. I mean, I'm there every day. I just sit on a lawn chair with my coffee and I just yell instructions to them about how to pour the concrete. And it's looking great. And I think it just speaks to my kind of philosophy or where I'm at in my life is, you know, the vitality that's being brought to that street, number one, I think is got a lot of upside. It was kind of the forgotten, you know, arterial route in the city. And I don't know. I sometimes with real estate and people's decisions, they're emotional. You know, there's always an emotional component to it. My wife and I have always kind of thought about this idea of living with our family in a condo, and lots of people do it. It has a bad stigma to it. There's some sort of undertone of stigma if a family's living in a condo, and I think that's ridiculous. And we're excited. So by the end of the year, they are hoping to be done, and we're hoping to be in.
It's funny. You've actually done like what most people's life trajectory is in about the last 3 years.
Yeah, no kidding, eh?
Backwards too. And I'm going backwards at the same time.
Soon you're going to be in a studio?
Yeah, pretty soon you're going to be in a retirement home in 2 years at the ripe age of 42.
Well, you know, we laugh about it, but it won't be too long. Here's the other thing that people always miss in this conversation. Like, this 3-bedroom condo is sub $1 million. Now, I get that it's still a privileged position and it's still a ton of money. You know, that said, to carry the burden of a $2 million detached house, for what purpose? And I love the fact that there's a pause there because, you know, it's slightly confrontational to people to analyze that when they're lugging this burden of a mortgage and maintenance and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So, you know, it's there's a certain sense of freedom that comes with maybe a slightly more responsible financial choice. And you do give up some space, you know?
Right.
You don't have all of the spaces all of the time, but we're going to try it, and I'll be the first one to admit if it doesn't work. But yeah, we're excited about it.
That is exciting though, Todd, because we were joking, I think, before we started the formal conversation that we're having right now. But I thought it that you have really good sense when you're buying, right? Like you're in Kelowna right now. Kelowna has exploded. You bought Mount Pleasant in timed it perfectly, and now it's like, man,
and
you've
East
had
Van, a and the move to East and the Van move to East Van the,
generally
well
into
timed.
Grandview.
And, yeah, even the sale in Lions Bay.
Yeah the and, sale and in then Bay. Yeah. So your timing is kind of impeccable, and I think you know, maybe it's your.
I feel like a golfer. I don't know. Do you ever watch golf on TV? And when they get interviewed at the end, it's very un-Canadian the way that they answer questions. They're like, "Yeah, I hit the ball really well today." You know, and you're like, "Oh my God, did he just say did he just compliment himself on television?" And I feel like I'm kind of being put in that position. I've often tried to analyze like where my strengths are in this whole real estate game. And they're tricky to talk about because I think one of them is just this instinct that's developed over time and based on experience, but finding a piece of the puzzle that maybe other people are overlooking or haven't quite jumped on board with, and being able to maximize the potential of a piece of property. That's kind of my wheelhouse, I think.
Right.
There's a lot of stuff I'm not good at, but that one is, I think that's my strength.
I just actually bought an assignment at Ella during this conversation.
I know, it's like follow Todd, right?
Follow Todd.
But honestly, like Nanaimo, I live right by Nanaimo, but it feels to me like it's so clearly, you know, they've traffic calmed it now.
Yep.
Everything about that move feels right to me. So congratulations. And also, hey, that was under $1,000 a foot when they were selling Ella. That was a slower pre-sale market. Like that was, yeah, nice move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, you got a Renzullo's right next door.
Right.
You know, like those types of elements, I think investors tend to overlook those things. Now, I prattled on about macro influences, but if you want to look at the micro stuff, you know, look at those like vibrant little symbols of life. Like it's kind of like a gardener, you know, going out and looking at the garden and seeing like a bud coming up. A really good gardener is going to be able to look at that and go, yeah, that's going to be a great crop. And me, I'd look at it and I'd be like, oh, that's a weed, and I'd pull it out. Like I'm a horrible gardener. But, you know, those are some of those little intangibles that when you're in tune with a neighborhood, you can start to see them and you can start to see that vibrancy and future potential.
What's next, Todd?
Oh, man. Okay, so one of them, I don't know what's next.
I was like, man, this, you're really ready to answer this.
Lunch. That's great. Coffee, yeah, might go chirp at the construction guys at Ella.
Yeah. Like I've got my 5-minute walk over to Ella. If you want to join me there, it's great. It is must see TV. You got to watch it in time lapse though. I've always had this dream of developing. You know, I know developers get a bad rap, but I've always wanted to develop a small residential cool project. Like that's, I've had that dream for probably 15 years. And, you know, I've been waiting for an opportunity where I can expand my ability to take that on. And, you know, I bought some pieces of property that I thought I could, you know, develop in the future. What became very apparent to me was that being a developer is a full-time job, and I don't have full-time. And I got connected with one of my good friends, Brandon, and Scott, who I've known for a while, who's the owner of Saint Construction and Saint Developments. Right. We got connected and started talking about the possibility of figuring out something to do together. And this goes back probably a year and a half, 2 years. So I decided to get involved in one of their developments even before it was a development, you know, in the negotiation, the finding of the property, the negotiation of it, et cetera, raising the funds to put together a group of investors, et cetera. And so, number one, I've really learned a lot in the process, because to watch these guys who are doing it day in, day out is fascinating. Their process and their pro formas and just their analysis on the market is a different mindset than, you know, the small investor, put it that way. And so I created an investment group. We've invested in 3 projects so far. And, you know, they're a little bit longer term, 2 years, 3 years out. But I'm so excited to be working with these guys. And it's just like it's invigorated me. And as a comment about the market, just anecdotally, I wanted to throw this out there, is phoning people up and asking them if they would like, and basically, you know, friends and family, if they would like to be involved in one of these projects. I thought maybe there would be some hesitation or some resistance in that, but people's confidence around the market, as well as some uncertainty as to where to put their money, has led to people jumping on board like ridiculously fast. You know, they're all smart people. It's not their first time investing in real estate. You know, everyone's done their due diligence. Everything's, you know, open book. But the appetite for it blew me away. I've yet to kind of distill exactly what that's all about. Maybe my friends just, you know, are sitting around waiting for me to call them. So I finally did. But there's something about that that I think indicates where we're headed. And when you get 15 people who are very smart, successful people, all kind of thinking the same way, having the same instinct, then, you know, I think that's a great indicator as well.
That's interesting. That's actually a conversation we've had on this program before, is I feel like a lot of conversations we're having with people in general, whether it's friends or family or clients, is that they've got money right now, or they feel like they've got money right now, and they're just trying to deploy it in any way possible. It's just it's finding the opportunity, which is seems to be the challenge for a lot of people, I think.
Yeah, and this kind of the emergence of this partnership with Saint and our little investor group, I think, is a really interesting opportunity. It gets you involved in the process so early that, you know, you start to build in better capacity for those returns, and you get to kind of pick and choose a little bit about, you know, the style of how things are going. No, I don't mean like end finishes, but, you know, you can align yourself with the people that are building the way that you would want them to build, that are choosing properties in the areas that you believe in. You know, those types of things. I think you need to find mechanisms that align with what you believe, your values, and then just life is so much easier. And I think more successful.
Well, maybe we'll leave it there, Todd, but we do always have the segment, the five wire, and I think this changed a little bit since you've been on last time, but can you stick around for that?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, so first question is, what is your favorite neighborhood in Vancouver? Maybe that's changed since last time. I don't know.
I don't think so, but maybe your neighborhood's changed. The question remains the same.
I'll go Grandview Woodlands, just because everyone always says where they live, and that always makes me laugh, because when they move, they change their story.
Well, last time I remember specifically you chose Britannia Sushi as your favorite restaurant. Because every time I walk by it, I go, huh, really? Okay.
Yeah. That guy's too high so for this podcast.
That reaction is true. Huh, really? Yeah.
Favorite restaurant.
Old habits, I guess die hard.
You can stick with Britannia if you'd like, but any other place you're liking these days?
How about Kisa Tanto? Not that I've been there in a long time, and I hope they're still
or
open.
Or ever?
I was going to say, we'll stick with the place you've actually tried.
I've been there many times. Right. It's an awesome, awesome restaurant.
Yeah.
Sit at the bar. I eat there, you know, post-COVID, or I don't know what the rules and regulations are right now, but great spot.
That's a good one. What is your favorite bar bar or restaurant? That kind of covers it.
You guys need to tweak your questions to make them a little bit more COVID friendly. I'll answer the bar question. My back alley, we've got a little routine where we walk over to the cold beer and wine store. We buy some beer and then we stand outside, freeze our ass off and drink a cold beer.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
And you guys are invited.
Oh, we'll take you up on that. Matt, you're not not far.
I think at one point we were talking about having a park beer.
We should make that happen.
Yeah.
What is one book? Here's a COVID-friendly one for you. One book that you'd recommend everyone read.
Oh, geez. So, honestly, I don't read books. I listen to some on Audible.
Right. Those apply.
Yeah, I feel like I need to open my Audible. This is a great statement on the current affair, you know, the current state of my mind. Like, I just have not been reading
since Audible, though. I honestly don't read anymore as well. It's in the car listening. One piece of advice that you'd give your 18-year-old self. There's an easy one.
Well, the first thought that popped into my mind, I don't think I should say, but the second one, which pretty I guess good. Maybe is related, I don't know, have more fun, buy more real estate. When you bought one condo, you should have bought two.
right.
I got to keep it real estate focused here.
I like have more fun.
my son is shooting a big a big series. I'm not allowed to say what it is at the moment. And he's 9 years old, and he's an amazing little actor. And, you know, he's only nine, so he, you know, struggles with the perspective. He's like, I don't want to go and do it tomorrow. And I'm like, okay, let me tell you something. You might not get this, but enjoy it right now, because this experience could go down as one of your best experiences of your entire life.
Right.
Right.
And if you don't enjoy it, you know, you will look back with some level of regret. And I do that. I look back at certain elements and things. And even still right now, you know, going through this build process up on our lake property in the Okanagan, you know, I'm not enjoying it. And I think in 10 years, I would probably look back at myself and go, you're an idiot. You should have just enjoyed it. Like, none of it really matters. It's all going to get resolved, and just enjoy the process. But it's so easy to say, and it is so hard to do.
Yeah. Well, that goes back to the, you know, I was thinking is when we were talking about kind of being able to pull the trigger in at certain points and big purchases and,
yeah.
And you know, kind of thinking about, okay, what's the worst case scenario here? And often it's, you know, chalk it up to experience. I don't know. Maybe that's just the way I think about things. But it's like, okay, if you make the wrong call once in a while, like once you've failed a couple times, it's not as bad as you think. Yeah, you'll take my word for it.
But I'll take your word for it.
I'll also take your word for it.
Oh, man. It's so true, though. Like, I think it's just, like, it's interesting from a real estate perspective. It's just, you know, protecting against the downside. Like, I just always ask myself, you know, we have this conversation with our investment partners. Okay, so what is the worst case scenario? And what are the potential pitfalls that we could hit? And then we just play out those scenarios and we go, okay, well, is that going to be devastating? No. Okay. You know, would we like it to end up a different way? Of course.
Right.
But you know, if you walk through those scenarios, sometimes you can get yourself out of that stuck spot where it feels daunting or I don't know, you know, unsolvable.
It's funny. A friend of ours, a friend of mine who actually listens to the program, but he's in the
you lost me at friend of yours.
Yeah.
He's listens to the program.
Yeah, listens to the program.
I didn't want to be that.
Those are obviously two lies. No, but he was saying that like the guys that he works with that approach projects with this kind of solution-based focus, like relentless solution-based focus when they're doing development projects or when they're just building. It's like they always end up better than the people that take everything to heart and get worked up and frustrated. So little pep talk for you, Todd.
You'll be all right.
Listen,
you'll be all right. You'll land on your
feet.
We've
got an upcoming session that I think we should definitely get into, which is recreational property, purchasing it, what to watch out for, pitfalls, you know, dispelling the fantasy of it, because everyone falls in love. They get super romantic when they start talking about recreational property. And not to be a killjoy, but there's the flip side of that coin. And as people investigate it more and more, you know, I think we should
do that very soon because of course, during COVID, I think that's a lot of people are thinking about those types of properties.
Yeah,
we should have you back specifically to talk about that.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's look at some different regions in the province. You know, we'll share our experience where we've named our project. It's called A-Frame, E-H frame, just to be cheesy Canadiana. And, you know, we're documenting our entire process. We got a website set up, aframe.com, and so people can kind of follow along. And I'm hoping to kind of share the trials and tribulations as well as the successes in that journey, because I think that that's the piece that most people don't talk about. It's a little raw right now to talk about because I'm afraid that some of these people might come back to get me. You might find me at the bottom of the lake, but at some point, all will be revealed.
Right on. Well, we'll have to do that very soon. As a final question, Todd, on the five wire here, something you have purchased for under $1,500 that has changed your life in the last 5 years or in the last couple of years. I do remember it was a coffee mug once.
I remember
some of your answers here.
Man, you, yeah, what a memory.
Oh, man, it's like I'm all things Todd.
He's wearing a Todd Talbot shirt right now.
Well, you can. We've got a shop, aframe.com. Go get your merch, bud. Something that I've bought. Well, I'll tell you one thing that I really love. Rebecca bought it for me from Bosa on Victoria there. It is a stovetop coffee maker, the single cup version. I don't know how much it is. It's probably like 20, 30 bucks. That's how I make my coffee every morning. It took me a little while to figure it out, but I love the coffee, number one. Number two, it's probably the most sustainable way to make coffee. There's just put the grounds in the thing and then we wash it out at the end. So none of those pods or any of that.
I got one of those as a gift, actually. And this is embarrassing, but yeah, it took more than 2 minutes to figure out and I haven't tried it. But yeah,
I watched a few YouTube videos, to be honest with you. And then my brother uses one, so he kind of gave me a bit of a tutorial. And now I'm hooked. It's awesome.
Nice. Yeah.
That's great.
That was a gift from friend of the show, Ray Macklem.
You lost me at friend. So, Todd.
You got to squeeze that joke in one more time. It's not quite funny. Comes in threes, baby.
So, Todd, how can people find out more about you, what you're up to, what you're building?
Sounds like aframe.com.
Yeah, but also the right sizing, all those exciting things that you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, social media is probably the easiest way to connect with me. I'm super active on Instagram and Facebook. So if people message me through there, any questions, I manage it myself. So I try and answer everybody. We're launching a brand new website, toddtalbot.ca. That won't be out for, I don't know, a couple weeks, months maybe, who knows, a couple years. But that will be showcasing the whole kind of right size philosophy, as well as links to A-Frame and some information about our investors group and a bunch of other kind of, you know, less important things like, you know, what I do on TV and stuff like that. yeah, so it's pretty easy to find me, I think. I'm also, you know, kind of at Britannia Sushi and wandering around. Although now I wear a baseball hat and a mask, no one can recognize anybody.
Right. So, except the construction workers at
now. Here he comes.
Here he comes.
Yeah. Here he comes. Here comes the, you know, quote unquote supervisor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Self-described supervisor.
Yeah. I wear a hat that says supervisor. I think they believe it.
All right. Well, thanks again, Todd, for taking the time. Always appreciate it.
You guys are awesome. Yeah. Thanks. Thanks for the good chat. And we'll talk soon.
So there you have it, folks, our discussion with Todd Talbot, past guest, fan favorite. I think you called him a Renaissance man to his face.
I did. I called him a Renaissance man. He's still, I lost a lot of sleep over that, wondering what he thought about that. Did I oversell him to himself?
I was going
to
say, you might have. There's a reason I'm talking about it.
Well, yeah, you've been thinking about that. A lot of people have been lying awake thinking about me calling Todd Talbot a Renaissance man. But you know what I meant?
Double down on it.
I'm going to double down on it. Who knows how to tap,
that's
dance,
true.
Sing, tap dance. That's, I didn't even,
tap and dance.
Yeah, tap and dance. Who knows how to do all those things? And then on top of it, they're a great real estate investor. They're a great personality, really nice person, sophisticated person. He's a good guy all around. He's a Renaissance man.
That's right. You've convinced me. Todd Talbot, AKA Renaissance man, Vancouver's own Renaissance man for sure.
Yeah.
And he's
I think we've called somebody else
a Renaissance man.
I'm sorry. I didn't understand. I'm looking for Encino man. I've been thinking that Renaissance man was meant Encino man this entire time. You're right. Yeah. I always thought of him as like that Brandon actor. Encino Man. I'm sorry. This is confusing. I'm embarrassed. Todd, we're
anyway,
sorry.
It was great to have Todd on the show.
Fantastic. What else do we have for today?
What else do we have? Very quickly, a few things. VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is our website where all things real estate live. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com and sign up for the LiveWire. This is our weekly mailer where you get stats and a variety of other information at your fingertips every week. There's no reason why you don't want to be on the LiveWire.
Right.
We also have that listing incentive.
Yep.
This is where there is an incentive for anyone looking to list this spring 2021. I think Powerwalker 2021 was the actual code.
That's the code.
Powerwalker 2021. If it's yourself or if it's a friend and family member who you think would gel well with the Scalina brothers, send them our way. Everybody wins with those incentives. We also have the sold marketing plan.
Yeah, Adam, Matt, this is the sold plan is start on launch date and work your way backwards. It's an actionable plan basically to get your home ready for market before we list. Super useful resource. So you can sign up, just put in Sellers Club into the subject line of an email. You can send it to info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com, or you can just sign up for the Live Wire and there's a button you can click on the Live Wire to get access to those resources. And last but not least, Matt, just want to quickly shout out PCS. And Matt, if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information at your fingertips. It's free. It's the best resource out there for looking at real estate in Vancouver. And Matt, how can people get in touch with you?
They can get in touch with me for any of these resources or any reason at all, 778-847-2854 or matt@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or adam@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
We also got that secret line, info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Was Pauly Shore an Encino Man?
I think so. And Brandon, I can't remember that guy's
name. Hey, buddy. Remember, is that Pauly? What happened to Pauly Shore? He was in like every movie ever.
The big
ever
question
growing
is,
up.
You know, it's funny to wrap this back to the start of this. There's a clear reason why Todd Talbot's famous. Pauly Shore, how did that ever happen? Apart from, I think,
buddy?
his mother owned
the Comedy Store.
Comedy Store in LA. But yeah. Man, what a.
Oh, you really hate Pauly Shore.
I'm just like wound up now.
Him and Pauly Shore and Gilbert Godfrey are my favorite actors.
Okay. Have a good week, guys. Take care.
2000 Faces for Radio. Subscribe today.
Hey everyone, pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
This podcast is sponsored by Common Ground Consulting.
Are you developing in the Lower Mainland? Common Ground Consulting is a development management and consulting company with experience in single family, townhouses, multifamily, and commercial developments.
What I love about Common Ground, Adam, is they manage the whole development process, from due diligence and feasibility reports for initial purchase of land to completing rezoning, development permits, and building permits.
They streamline the whole process with strong relationships with sub-consultants and municipalities and a deep understanding of all city requirements.
Common Ground Consulting. Feasibility and efficiency prioritized every step of the way.
Learn more at commonground-consulting.com or 604-807-6419.
We are also sponsored by Oakwin Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakwin, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakwin.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.